host this morning, Ryan Smithy, right along with Chip Horton.
Hello, hello, hello.
And certainly send you greetings from a damp North Texas.
Amen.
Certainly thankful that we have enjoyed some rain, but want to continue to remember those who maybe got a little more than they were ready for. And certainly those in Houston and others at this time are certainly struggling with that and want to continue to remember them and their cleanup efforts and even rescue efforts that are going on, and maybe more rain even coming in the next few days. So I want to remember those areas as well in our prayers. Well, Chip, we're going to maybe push some of the announcements towards the end. Certainly want to remind you of some upcoming events, but anxious to get right into John chapter 9 this morning.
Yes, sir. Very good stuff.
And here we continue through the life of Jesus. And I think the thing I love about John chapter 9 is we, in the midst of the threats to Jesus' life, in the midst of everything that's going on at this point in time, here's a man that deals honestly with the things that are placed before him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's willing to look at and not be swayed by the perceptions of the people or even the religious leaders, but to simply say, I know what happened.
Yeah.
And you can't change my mind on that, and so was willing to become a follower of Jesus. And so a great example before us of this man that was born blind. I want to remind you that these are coming off the topics here of chapter 8, where Jesus has just had to slip out, as it were. We don't know all the details there of John 8 and verse 59. They're ready to take up stones and cast at Jesus, and Jesus hid himself, went out of the temple going through by the midst of them, and so passed by. It wasn't time for that kind of turmoil. It will be soon enough. And again, I would remind you that most place these events right around 6 months or just a little less from this point to the time of Jesus' crucifixion. And so that hour is coming, but it is not now. And so remember that in our minds as well. There's already kind of this this tumult that's going on. There's already this confusion and even somewhat hatred that has developed against Jesus, not just with the religious leaders, but even some of the things that have been said here about how that they were of their father, the devil. And they're trying to say, well, Abraham's our father, and Jesus rightfully tells them, if Abraham was your father, you would believe me, and you would believe God, and you would follow him.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not, and so that's why they're ready to cast up stones. And yet, even in the midst of that, that does not keep Jesus from doing good. And so let's look here just at the maybe the first five verses here of John chapter 9.
All right. And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be manifest in him. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world.
All right, as we look here, there's a number of things that we can learn. One of the things that pops out at us immediately, and we need to remember, this man was born blind, or he was blind from birth. This was nothing that had happened to him later in life that had caused his vision to deteriorate. It's nothing that, you know, he's not just, sometimes we know those today, they're legally blind, but he can see a few things. This man, every indication here, he was blind from birth and had never seen anything in his life. Number two we might learn here is something about his age. We'll get into this later in the text, but one of the things we're going to see is his parents will identify him as one that's old enough to speak for himself.
Right.
When the questions begin coming. And so we don't really know his age, but we have an idea here, anyone, of one that has grown to adulthood, that is somewhat probably caring for himself to some degree here anyway. And so that those two events are going to help legitimize this this miracle.
Mm-hmm.
The very fact that he was born blind and that he was old enough to speak for himself.
One thing that stood out to me, too, is the number of times that born blind is mentioned
mm-hmm.
during the
mm-hmm.
whole chapter. And so we're called to look back and realize, you know, the significance of it. Like you
right.
mentioned, it wasn't something that just happened. He fell down and hurt his head or whatever. It
mm-hmm.
was from birth.
Mm-hmm. And part of, I think we'll deal with this a little bit. I mean, part of why that's so significant is even still today, sight is one thing that doctors, you know, I'm thankful for the advancements we've made. Without corrective lenses or perhaps LASIK or something of that nature, I would not be able to see anything hardly.
As we both sit here with glasses on.
I would probably be one of those that would be close to being legally blind. You certainly wouldn't want me behind the wheel of a car. We can do a lot of things with vision, but you take that vision away, and that's something that doctors still are not able to really deal with, and certainly not someone that has been born blind. And so that is significant, even as we look at our medical advancements today. We still don't have the tools to do what Jesus did.
That's right.
And some of these other things, you know, we can help give the lame options to walk and other such things, but not vision. Well, the disciples are going to ask concerning this man, and you know, it maybe strikes us, but it's probably not that far off from most people's thinking. Somebody had to sin. Did that man sin, or did his parents? What happened that caused this blindness? And to some degree, that misconception is still seen even today.
You betcha.
If somebody's doing really well, people tend to think they must be doing something right in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And if something's going really poorly for someone, they begin to think, what did that person do wrong? That somehow sin or bad choices and things had to have affected that person. And sometimes that's right. Sometimes we have to deal with the consequences of sin, and they cost us.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even in that time, we talked back in Luke chapter 13. Luke chapter 13, when Jesus says twice there in verse 3 and in verse 5, I tell you nay, but except you repent, you shall all likewise perish. The whole idea there was, unless you change your mind about these things, you're going to perish in your sin, because they were thinking of God as unjust and unrighteous because of the death of those who the Tower of Siloam fell, those who a fire had destroyed. Jesus is reminding it wasn't their sin that caused these things to happen. Neither was it this man's sin. After all, again, he had been born blind. It wasn't his own sin. And Jesus is going to tell us as well, it wasn't the sins of his parents, but it was that the glory of God could be shown through him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so from the time of Job, which may well be one of the earliest accounts, and Job's friends attacking him and saying, Job, these problems are because of your sin.
Good friends.
To today, that is a common misconception, and we see it here even among the disciples. And so that blindness was not due to sin. It wasn't the particular hardships of life, but here it helped fulfill the mission of Jesus and would be used to the glory of God.
Mm-hmm.
Here we see Jesus as well. That the glory of God would be manifest in him at the end of verse 3. But notice Jesus' reaction as well in verse 4 and 5 as he talks about his mission and his desire to do the will of the Father. And he says, I'm going to continue doing that as long as I have opportunity. And again, I would relate back to chapter 8 and verse 59. He's in an area where people want to kill him, and yet that's not going to keep him from doing good.
Mm.
I'm going to do the works of the one that sent me while it is day. And I think we understand there Jesus using that terminology in the sense of the proper time for work.
Mm.
That's day. And as long as I'm in this life, that's the proper time for work. He knows his time is near. Again, Jesus knowing the events that are going to unfold. He knows his time is not yet, but it's rapidly approaching. And I think if we took anyone in this life and told them, you have about 6 months to live, it's going to change their perspective on life.
I bet you.
And what's important and what is prioritized. And here is Jesus knowing my time is short. And so the time that he had left, the time that he had to do his Father's will, was short as well. And so I will work the works of him that sent me while it is day, for the night is coming. There's coming a time, night, when no longer do we have that opportunity to work. For him, it was going to be his death, his crucifixion. Mm-hmm. And here, so he was going to use that time. It's a challenge to us as well, though. To use the opportunities we have. We may not know how much day, in that sense, we have left. How many opportunities do we have before us? How many days do we continue to have to do the will of the Father on this life? We don't know. But that's why we'll read warnings such as Ecclesiastes 5, verse 15 and 16 there, and the idea of redeeming the time. Walking circumspectly or walking with great decision there and thoughtfulness. How are we working? How are we walking through this life? Is it like Jesus? To use the time and the opportunity that we have here in this world, and would that more would use it like Jesus to do the will of the Father. Mm. And then again, he refers to himself there in verse 5, as long as I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. And that is a common theme. I think Richard, Richard on Sunday, talked about Jesus in terms of the light that is seen throughout the book of John. I think it was Richard, mm-hmm. but, you know, that is a common theme. Sometimes we go and we talk just about a particular statement. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. But really from John chapter 1, Jesus is presented as the light that shines in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Mm. Throughout the book of John, he is presenting Jesus as this light of the world that is shining in darkness, the light of the world that the world doesn't want to be exposed, doesn't want to see its works put on display. But here was Jesus in that true light that is shining in darkness, the one that exposed sin and error, the one that revealed truth and righteousness, a very fitting image as we think about light. And so he was going forth doing these good things. Hmm. And so here's this response. We see this blind man, his disciples make a reaction, Jesus is drawn to him. But now as we continue, we're also going to see the blind man's reaction, and we'll break this up in about five different sections. All of them deal with somebody's reaction, and so first we've seen the disciples' reaction. Now let's see the blind man's reaction. What is he going to do with Jesus in verse 6 and 7?
When he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay and said unto him, Go. Wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. He went his way, therefore, and washed, and came seeing.
All right. And so as we look at Jesus here, we don't always know the reason why he did things that he did. Could he not have just said, receive your vision and go your way? Mm-hmm. Certainly seems he could have. I have no doubt there was a reason behind his thinking here. Some have tried to suggest why did he make this clay of spittle and dirt? Why did he have him go and wash in the pool of Siloam? Some have said, well, Jesus was challenging their thoughts. They thought of this as medicinal. And so they would see Jesus healing on the Sabbath and he would challenge their thinking on that, to think about what does God require and what has man required, even in terms of the Sabbath. Some have suggested that it was in regards of testing this man's faith. to see what is he going to do. I don't just want to see this man stand up and receive his vision. Is he willing to go and do something that has been requested of him? And you know, maybe our minds go back to Naaman in, what is it, 2 Kings chapter 5.
Yeah.
2 Kings chapter 5, Naaman's told to go and dip seven times in the Jordan River.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at first, that doesn't make any sense to me. We have better rivers back home. Why can't I go dip in those rivers? But the question comes down to, are you willing to do what was asked of you? And what a wonderful statement of faith, even by Naaman's servant girl, that would I think it was, that comes back to him and challenges him. If he'd asked something great of you, would you not have gone and done it?
Hmm.
And so, if he asked something simple of you, why won't you go and do it?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people get caught up in that today, even as we struggle with that idea. Well, does one have to be baptized? Does one have to do this or do that? And I think, you know, if Jesus had challenged us with something great and hard and difficult or showy, people might be willing to do it. But baptism seems maybe in some sense simple.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't reason with them. And so they're not willing to do that which Jesus has simply asked of them. This man is simply asked, go and wash here with the pool of Siloam and wash that clay away. I want to see what this man now is going to do. And so Jesus applies that clay that he has made. He's given him instruction, and he goes his way.
Hmm.
He does what Jesus said, and he comes again seeing. And so with those instructions, we see the miracle take place.
Mm.
And, you know, what a simple statement at the end of verse 7. He came again seeing.
Right.
But I want you to think, still, the main focus we have here is the man's reaction is his obedience, his faithfulness. But imagine a man that has never been able to see anything in his life.
Mm-hmm.
He's touched things. He's heard voices. But now you're able to see people around you. You're able to see the beauty of the world and hear the, if you will, allow me to go back, the true light brought light into the life of this man that he was now able to see, that once was in darkness, but now he can see.
That's interesting. You know, the way we mentioned about the crucifixion, it just says that he was crucified,
mm-hmm.
and there's not a lot of gory details,
right.
You know, and I noticed here, you know, if you know, I have to consider myself, what would I have done? Man, I would have been jumping for joy and running up and down the streets, touching trees and, you know, touching people's faces and looking inside of doors. And I, you know, and it just simply says he came seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to believe within me somewhere that there's a little bit more to it than
right.
that. I mean, I don't disbelieve the scriptures, but I notice it's kind of a generic statement there. He came
right.
seeing, you know.
It's kind of a muted
muted
recording for us. I'm sure there was a lot of rejoicing.
Mm.
But let me attach that as well with the idea of our own obedience. As the Hebrew writer would put it, Jesus has become the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him.
Mm.
Just as he brought light into that man who through faith was willing to do what Jesus said, when we in faith respond to Jesus and obey him, he takes us out of darkness into his marvelous light. He takes away the weight of sin and gives us the hope of salvation.
Mm.
And so for as much joy as that man had, surely at receiving his sight, I think there's spiritual lessons, spiritual applications we might be able to make there as well to one who is spiritually in darkness and now has received sight. And again, it happens in the same way we see with this young, this man, that he was willing to obey Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not enough, we get to see the neighbors and the friends' reactions. And this happens in verse 8 through 12.
The neighbors, therefore, and they which before had seen him, that he was blind, said, is not this he that sat and begged? Some said, this is he. Others said, he is like him. But he said, I am he. Therefore said they unto him, how are thine eyes opened? He answered and said, A man that is called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said unto me, Go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed, and I received sight. Then said they unto him, Where is he? He said, I know not.
All right. So as we look at this reaction, imagine now there's somebody in your town that you have daily seen sitting, begging for alms, asking for help. Now he's up and walking. He's moving about on his own. Probably, as you said, he's jumping for joy. He's running up and talking to people he knows, and he's looking in wonder at all of the things that are about him. I can imagine this is creating quite a stir, not just with the man, but the people. They began whispering and wondering, and we see this confusion in them. We would do the same thing. You know, sometimes we'll see somebody across the way, and we just kind of stare at them. We think, is that something? Well, it kind of looks like them, but, you know, it's been a little while since I've seen them. I'm just not sure. Maybe it's someone that looks similar, but that could be. I imagine the same thing's going on here. That looks like the man that was blind yesterday. That looks like the man we've seen sitting there by the temple gate or on the side of the road. And is that him, or is it somebody that looks like him? Does he have a brother we didn't know about? You know, those kind of questions, I'm sure, are going on in their mind. And then to hear him confess, no, I am he. I'm the one you're thinking about there in verse 9. I am the one. Well, with that, their next reaction is rather natural as well. What happened? How is it that you were blind, but now you are able to see? And we begin to understand that people can grasp that something great, something notable has happened here as they see this change in his life. Just another quick side note as we think about lessons of chapter 9. But what a lesson in personal evangelism as well. Should not people be able to see a great change in our life? They knew this day something was different about that man. And I think in our own lives, people ought to be able to see something that's different in our lives when we've come to know Jesus, when we've come to be faithful and obedient to him, when we've been turned from darkness to light. They ought to see a change that makes them wonder, that makes them question. Again, I don't want to labor those points, but I think those are some lessons that we can draw as we go through here. Would we not want to be telling people about what Christ has done for us and about the changes that have happened in our own lives? That's what's happening here. The people see the change and they're asking, what happened? And he's ready to tell them. Now, he doesn't know a whole lot at this point. I don't know who he is. I don't really know how this happened. But I am he. There was this man that was called Jesus. He anointed my eyes. He told me to go wash. And I went and I washed and I received sight. That's all I can tell you. That's what happened. You know, sometimes we don't have all the answers to all the questions. But can we tell forth what we know? And that's what he was willing to do.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Yeah. And so where is he is the next question. We want to see him. And the point is, I don't know. Jesus likely still wandering about. Perhaps he has hidden himself again because of the uproar that had just happened in chapter 8. He's removing himself from that. But he does not know where Jesus is at this point anyway. And so that's the people's reaction.
Similar to what we saw in chapter 5, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the pool there at Bethesda, and they were asking him, where is he? And it says there that he had commuted himself away. You know, he had moved on, and he found the man later.
Right.
But, you know, same thing is going on here. Who is he? Where is he? Where is the guy that did this? A lot of similarities.
Yes, yes. Now, the bulk of the chapter is going to be spent here. I want to go ahead and, Chip, if I can give you a marathon reading here, about 20 verses here. But I want to go ahead and look at the entirety of the Pharisees' reaction and see what they're going to do. And so let's go on from verse 13 down to verse 34, and then we'll come back and look at some of the individual sections here.
Okay. They brought to the Pharisees him that aforetime was blind. And it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then again the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He said unto them, He put clay on mine eyes, and I washed, and I do see. Therefore said some of the Pharisees, This man is not of God, because he keepeth not the Sabbath day. Others said, How can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them. They say unto the blind man again, What sayest thou of him that he hath opened thine eyes? He said, He is a prophet. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. And they asked him, saying, Is this your son, who ye say was born blind? How then doth he now see? His parents answered them and said, We know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. But by what means he now seeth, we know not. Or who hath opened his eyes, we know not. He is of age. Ask him. He shall speak for himself. These words spake his parents, because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Therefore said his parents, He is of age. Ask him. Then again called they the man that was blind, and said unto him, Give God the praise. We know that this man is a sinner. He answered and said, Whether he be a sinner or no, I know not. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. Then said they to him again, What did he to thee? How opened he thine eyes? He answered them, I have told you already, and you did not hear. Wherefore would ye hear it again? Will ye also be his disciples? Then they reviled him and said, Thou art his disciple, but we are Moses' disciple. We know that God spake unto Moses. As for this fellow, we know not from whence he is. The man answered and said unto them, Why herein is a marvelous thing that ye know not from whence he is, and yet he hath opened my eyes? Now we know that God heareth not sinners. But if any man be a worshipper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth. Since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind? If this man were not of God, he could do nothing. They answered and said unto him, Thou wast altogether born in sins, and dost thou teach us? And they cast him out.
Okay, and so this through this whole section, we get to see what is the Pharisees' reaction. And notice here how it begins in verse 13. They, the crowd of the people, are going to bring him to the Pharisees. I don't think there's necessarily any malice, any animosity of the crowd at this point, either to Jesus or to this man. But I think we can simply understand this as, you know, the religious leaders of the day. And they want to take him, and they're looking for answers. Mm. We don't know how this happened. We're kind of confused, and so they're searching for answers. And I would say that's the most natural understanding of why they have brought him to the Pharisees, for them to see this thing that has happened and to inquire more of how it could be. Mm-hmm. And then throughout this section, we get to see, well, this is how the Pharisees respond. There's going to be questions. There's going to be attacks, and ultimately they're going to cast that man out of the synagogue because they don't want to hear of Jesus and the things that he has done. And so multiple times throughout this chapter, the Pharisees are going to ask concerning what had happened. But what we really see, their biggest concern is not what actually happened. It's not about this man. It's not about the restoration of his sight. It's about accusing Jesus by healing on the Sabbath day. And I was thinking as even more, I guess, as I review through John again for these studies, is that these events really just become a convenience. Mm-hmm. We're looking for any way to attack him, any way to try to destroy him, any way to remove his popularity. And so what do? We attack the man. Mm-hmm. And we can't deny that something happened, but we can say, well, in other occasions we see he did it by the power of Beelzebub. You know, he did it by the power of Satan. He's not a good man. He's a sinner because he did this on the Sabbath, and he contradicted not so much God's law, but their own word. You know, they're going to use all of these attacks against him. And so I think that's a large part of their questioning here, to see if these things had to happen. There's the note here, and I had this from a previous study. Richard and I got to talk about the woman taken in adultery yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me, John doesn't always give us great detail, but I wonder if this didn't happen on the same day as John chapter 8. Hmm. If it did, they were willing to bring a woman and accuse her of adultery before Jesus on the Sabbath day.
Right.
But they weren't willing to stand here and see that Jesus would heal or make someone whole on the Sabbath day. There's certainly a great contradiction. Again, I can't force that, but it does create at least a question in my mind. And so they don't want to deal with this miracle. They rather would attack Jesus and even attack this man, trying to discredit him, I think, is a large part of this. And so they have called the parents. They want to question him. Here, as you go through... Let's review, make sure we don't skip over anything. But they're asking this man how he had received the sight. He recounts his story in verse 15. Verse 16 is where they begin these personal attacks. Well, this man's not of God because he did this on the Sabbath day. And others are rightfully saying, how can he not be of God? Mm-hmm. How can he be a sinner if he's able to do such things? And there's already this kind of division among them, and so they ask him again. Verse 17, what do you have to say about this man that opened your eyes? And I love his response. He's a prophet. There's something special about him. I don't know all the truth yet, but he did something great. And so I know that he must be a man of God. Well, verse 18, the Jews just chose not to believe him, John seems to use this term, the Jews, not so much as a representative of the people as a whole, but of the religious leaders.
Yeah.
That kind of had a voice for the people. And so the Jews didn't believe concerning him until they called his parents. How oftentimes will you, we discredit, you'll see some magic act or something, and your first thought may be, his assistant was a plant. You know, mm-hmm. He grabbed somebody out of the audience, but that was a plant. That guy knew what was going on. And that almost seems to be the idea here. Well, this is a plant. This man really wasn't blind. He's just saying that he was blind, and now he can see. And so let's call his parents and see what they're going to say. And verse 19, is this your son? Was he born blind? How does he now see? And his parents... You know, naturally, yes, it's our son. We know who he is. And yes, we know that he was born blind. You know, those are two things that they can be very firm on. But this third question, I struggle with how to look at his parents. And he said, we know it's our son. We know that he was born blind. But verse 21, we don't know how he can now see. Now, there's no indication that they were there. And so in many ways, they're being true and accurate. Mm-hmm. We don't know what happened. We don't know who opened his eyes. But he is of age, ask him. To some degree there, I'm willing to say that they're just answering honestly. But they almost seem to be casting him under the bus, in a sense. Mm-hmm. They're not willing to stand by their son. But still, they're being truthful. He's of age. He can answer for himself. Why won't you listen to him? But John also records for us a little more in verse 22. Mm-hmm. And 23, a big part of the reason why they're answering this way is fear.
Yeah.
They feared man more than God. They feared their position, if you will. It was a big thing. The temple was a place of worship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be on the Pharisees' bad side because they're going to kick me out of the temple, and so I don't want to say anything about Jesus or about this man that might have done this thing. And so they're going to keep silent and say, why don't you just ask him? And certainly a great lesson for us. This man was willing to stand up and to be heard even when it was unpopular, even when it might get him kicked out of the temple, but he still did it. And we could go to Matthew 10, verse 32, and the idea there of confessing Christ and being willing to stand up for him. We could go to the idea of fearing God more than man. Certainly some great lessons there. But they seemingly, anyway, John reveals to us, cared more about their place. They feared the Jews. They feared the being kicked out of the temple. And so they kept silence in that regards.
And notice the sway then. My lands, these people are cowering under the religious leaders. I mean, just try to put that in some sort of context of today. You know, when you walk in, you know, and you see, you know, our elders standing at the back door, some, you know, kind of groveling and getting on your knees and being scared to say anything. I can't imagine living under such oppression, you know, and the same thing's repeated. I just flipped over a minute ago and remember John 12 and verse 42, you know, many of the important people there, they were believing, but they feared to confess Jesus because of this same thing that John repeats here. And so John continues to show us this heavy hand of the Pharisees, this heavy hand that they have, and what an evil people that Jesus would say that they have closed their own eyes and covered their own hearts and stopped up their own ears that they can't be healed. And here's a man that just simply followed the words of Jesus and got his sight, but they refused.
And we see that refusal even just here in the idea. They know something now has happened. They can't deny it, and they can't deny it before the people. All they can do is try to attack the man. And so they're unwilling to examine the evidence. They're unwilling to stand with where the evidence would point them. And so they're continuing in their attacks. I think there's the sense they're discrediting the man. They're trying to discredit the parents. And now they're going to call the man again, as you drop down even into verse 24. Give God the praise, because that man that you're speaking of is a sinner. Well, that's a marvelous thing, because I know what he did to me. And that's what I love about this man, not even knowing him, but what we know of him. Verse 25, I don't know what he is. But I know what he did. I can see the evidence. And somewhat like Nicodemus in John 3. You come before Jesus and he says, we know that thou art a man sent from God, because no man can do these things that thou doest except God be with him. And I think I see that same seed within this man. I was blind and now I see, so you're going to have a hard time convincing me that that man's a sinner. And so again, they're going to question him. What did he do? How did he open your eyes? I've answered this question probably three or four times at least by this occasion. I've told you already, and like as you were reading that, I can hear that frustration probably that's building in this man's voice. You want to hear it again? And now maybe even that little, you know, he was sharp-witted. What do you want to become his disciples? You're trying to learn about him. And that of course, riles them up. We're Moses' disciples. Well, the truth is Moses spoke of Jesus. Moses pointed to Jesus. And so, no, they weren't even following the law or the will of Moses, or else they would have recognized Jesus. But that was their claim. And how is it, verse 29, they say that we know God spoke to Moses, but we don't know where this man's from. They failed. They missed something here about Moses and about the prophecies of the one that was to come. And they closed their eyes to these things, even as they are doing on this occasion. They have the evidence before them, but they refuse to see it.
Even as chapter 8 closed, I was glancing across the page there. You're not even 50 years old. How have you seen Abraham, you know? And he says, before Abraham was, I was.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, here it is in black and white.
Yeah.
and you're just not going to see it, you know. Mm.
Well, as they continue, here the man again marvels, verse 30. You don't know where he's from, and yet he's opened my eyes. How has he done this great miracle again, except God had been with him? He speaks some great truths here for what they would probably consider an uneducated man. After all, he was a blind man. He probably hadn't had great training, but he speaks up and he says, we know that God hears not sinners, but if any man be a worshiper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth.
Mm-hmm.
Even here in verse 32, this further proof, ever since the world began, no one could do this great thing that he's just done, restore sight to the blind.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he is a great man. And if he were not from God, he could do nothing. And so he's speaking great truths. He's making application here to things. And some, even today, kind of discredit and look at that man and say, well, we've got to be careful. Let's remember he's not an inspired man, but he's speaking truths that are found elsewhere on the pages of the Bible. I think he's making accurate application. You know, we could go back to Psalm 34, verse 15 and 16, and it says, the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous. His ears are open unto their cry, but the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. Again, Proverbs 15, verse 29, the Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. And so those were biblical truths that he was looking back to. So if he was wicked, God wouldn't do these great things through him. Mm. And how is it that anyone but God could do these things?
Yeah.
And so he's reasoned with them in this way. And all they can do, again, is attack the man. verse 34, they have no answer.
That's right.
And how many times when someone has no answer, they try to shut you down, and that's exactly what they do here. They use their power to attack him once again and says, you were born in sin. Maybe again a dig on the fact that he was born blind, and you're trying to teach us, and so they cast him out of the temple. They have removed that great privilege from him. And so a day that had started so well for this man, I started out blind, I could see, and then I was attacked and kicked out of the temple. I mean, what a roller coaster of a day. I do want to make a point. Here's that note I was looking for earlier. It was not until 1728 that we have any record of one being able to restore sight to the blind. Mm. That was an English surgeon. I believe the name here is Chalcedon. Is my best guess. But all he did was the removal of a cataract.
Hmm.
And that was someone, you know, that the blindness had progressed. He was able to discover how to remove a cataract. But note, that was just restoration of sight.
Mm-hmm.
It's not giving sight to the blind. And so, you know, that goes back to that note about how even today, we need to understand the power of what Jesus did on that occasion. To give sight to the blind was something that only he could do. And so that's the reaction of the Pharisees we see through there. They've attacked Jesus, they've attacked the man, and ultimately kicked him out.
Attacked the parents too, really.
Right.
You know.
But let's end on a bit of a higher note. Fortunately, his roller coaster doesn't end in that valley. I can imagine how he's probably depressed. Maybe discouraged by the things that have just happened, bewildered.
Yeah.
And yet now he gets to come face to face with the man that restored his vision in verse 35 through verse 41.
Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said unto him, dost thou believe on the Son of God? He answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe him? And Jesus said unto him, Thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. And Jesus said, for judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind. And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words and said unto him, Are we blind also? Jesus said unto them, If ye were blind, ye should have no sin. But now you say, We see, therefore your sin remaineth.
All right. And so we have again this dealing, you know, how I can't imagine how that man must have felt. Perhaps, you know, perhaps he had the fortitude to go away and saying, Hey, I stood up for what was right and was right in so doing. But I can imagine he would be discouraged. But here again, the compassion of the Savior that's going to go forth and find that man. I know that he was cast out. I've heard these reports. And so he is seeking for him and finds him. And again, we see that the compassion and reveals himself now. The man now knows who healed him was Jesus, but he still knows little else of him. And so Jesus reveals himself as the Son of God, the Messiah. Hmm. And what a great faith. That man was willing to believe when the facts were shown to him. Mm. You think at that moment, he has everything that he needs. I'm the one that restored that sight to you. I am the Son of God. By the things that he had heard and seen, he's willing to believe Jesus and have faith in him. Mm-hmm. And so, now having revealed himself to him, verse 38, he says, Lord, I believe, and he worshiped him. And what a proper response that when we come to know Jesus, to believe on him and to worship him and to follow him. Jesus will go on there in verse 39 and says, I didn't come to condemn the world in terms of judgment. No, but I came because the world was already condemned in sin. And so in that sense, for judgment, I am come into the world. That they which see not might be able to see, and they which see might be made blind. There's this contrast here. Here's a man physically born blind, but now can see. Jesus has helped him see not just physically, but also spiritually, to come to know the Son of God. And yet there were those who thought they could see, who thought they knew God, that have, of their own accord, closed their own eyes, who refused to see the truth that was right in front of them. I would refer you back to Matthew 13, about verse 11 through 15 there, where Jesus talks about the fact that there are those who have closed their eyes, they've closed their ears, so that they would not understand. But if they would listen and if they would see, Jesus would come to them and heal them. But they have refused of their own. I also think of the idea of those that need a physician. You know, he says, it's not the well that need a physician. You don't recognize your sin, so you're not seeking help, and you'll die in your sin. Mm-hmm. That was the attitude even we continue to see here of the Pharisees. They thought they needed no enlightenment. Mm-hmm. They thought they knew it all. And so they refused to see the truth. That was right in front of them. And so Jesus' statement here in regard to the Pharisees' question, you know, no, likely in great indignation as they hear these things that Jesus is saying. He said, what are you saying? We're blind? Is that what you're trying to say? How could anyone think us blind? Mm-hmm. We're God's leaders. We're the leaders of this nation. Mm-hmm. Well, on another occasion, did he not talk about the blind leading the blind? Mm-hmm. They were blind in the sense that they had opportunity to see the truth, but made themselves blind willingly, that they would not see what was right in front of them. No, they're not blind in the sense that you have no opportunity. And I think verse 41 can be difficult in that regard. If you were blind, you would have no sin. If you didn't know the truth, if you didn't have these things right before you, you might have some excuse not to know who Jesus was. but now you're blind, not because those things were hidden from you, but you're blind because you refuse to see them. You say, we see. And so you're looking at what's happening right in front of you, but you're refusing to consider it, and so therefore your sin remains. They were guilty because they should have known who Jesus was, and they rejected it. And I want to remind us there of a quote. I think it's been traced all the way back to at least 1546, but it's a saying, there are none so blind as those who will not see. And that's the Pharisees on this occasion. They refuse to see. They're the ones that go away with their spiritual blindness now and refuse to see. But the one who is willing to look into the things that were done and consider them was made whole. Chip, you have something to add there? Or
well, I was thinking along those same lines back in 1 John 1 and verse number 8.
Mm-hmm.
If we say that we have no sin,
mm-hmm.
we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. And I look back here at these Pharisees who say, oh, we have no sin.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, what is John, as he would later write, what does he say here? They were blind, and they were deceiving themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Jesus was causing them to try to see. You know, you're deceiving yourselves, and what foolishness, what folly, you mm-hmm. know. And the same is true with any of us, you know, that try to deny that, well, you know, we have never made problems for ourselves, or that we are, you know, without sin, as the scripture would say, we're simply just deceiving ourselves.
Right.
Same thing that James would say, you know, we deceive ourselves. And what a thing to have to answer for in the last day, mm-hmm. you know. Deceptive,
mm-hmm.
deceiving my own self. So,
and so the, you know, the question comes to us, who will you be more like? Are you going to be like that man that was blind but now could see and to see the truths that are before us in God's word, or more like the Pharisees who will shut their eyes and shut their minds to the truth that they could and should know that also was right before them?
Mm-hmm.
And what a sad statement. I want to wrap up that chapter. I meant to make a note here. Go back to verse 33 just for a moment, where that young, where this man that had been, his sight had been restored, said, if this man were not of God, he could do nothing. And in the notes for this chapter I had written out, is that not the reoccurring theme of this whole book? You can know Jesus and see who he is. John will say at the end, that's why I've written, that you can know Jesus and thereby be made free.
And even the converse, chapter 2 and verse 24 and 25, Jesus did not commit himself unto them because he knew all men and needed not that any should testify of man, for he knew what was in man. And so when you see him coming to the Samaritan lady, when you see him coming to the pool of Bethesda, when you see him coming here, you know, he knows these individuals,
mm-hmm.
And he certainly knew the ones whom he was addressing here at the end, the Pharisees. He knew all about them.
Right. Very true. So a wonderful chapter. Certainly appreciative of the opportunity to study through it this morning. I hope you can join us again tomorrow morning at 9 as Chip and Richard. I'll be looking at John chapter 10, John chapter 10 tomorrow morning. As we sign off, I want to quickly remind you of some of those ongoing events, and particularly tonight, if you are in the North Texas area, Fruitvale Church of Christ at Fruitvale, Texas, is continuing their gospel meeting. This is with Eddie Parrish and looking at the book of Nehemiah. Let us rise up and build if Nehemiah were alive today. And tonight at 7:30, they're going to be looking at Would the Workers Sacrifice? And then they'll wrap up tomorrow night, Could He Find Strong Leaders? And so again, Fruitvale Church of Christ, gospel meeting with Eddie Parrish tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30. And then April 22nd, we have a congregational singing, area-wide congregational singing right here at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And with some refreshments afterward. We'd love for you to call ahead at 903-537-4127. 2-9. If you're wanting to lead singing on that night, just to help us organize a little better. And then also this weekend is the Love Lady Lectures in East Texas. This is going to be a study in lessons in lyrics, and they open with a food and fellowship Friday night, and Saturday from 12:30 to 5 or till about 6, we'll have lessons. And then again on Sunday from 9:30 to about 12, till about 2, the Love Lady Lectures. And we'll be broadcasting those live as well on the Gospel Radio Network. But hope that you can join us in Love Lady, Texas for that great event. We'll have that schedule up soon for the broadcast on the website. Next week, April 24th through 27th, the Gospel Meeting at Tyler with the Broadway Church of Christ. They're going to be looking at New Testament Christianity in a Modern World with Rick Brombach is going to be the speaker for that occasion, and also looking forward to broadcasting that event. And then finally, two events. We have the Focal Point at the University Church of Christ in San Marcos, Texas, coming up April 30th through May 5th. You can still register for that at univcofc.com and univcofc.com for University Church of Christ, and be able to register there. Also find the schedule for that event. And then finally, the 24th Annual Gulf Coast Lectures in Portland, Texas, and this year looking at Christian fellowship. That'll be Thursday night, Friday night, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday, May 5th through May 8th. And so wonderful opportunities there before us. And again, we thank you for joining us today. Hope you'll join us tomorrow morning for John chapter 10 and continuing to listen throughout the day right here on the Gospel Radio Network.
Been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.